natural. And one of the hard bits about this year is not being able to hug our loved ones. Researchers are giving top praise, though, to our pets for filling in this void and providing comfort during uncertain times. We are joined by Dr. Jeanette Young from the University of South Australia, who just released a paper about the roles our pets have played this year and why governments need to be paying attention to it. Good morning, Jeanette.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good. So, firstly, there was a big demand for people getting pets this year. I mean, the adoption rates and the sales were so high. Why do you think there was this sudden surge in demand?
I suspect part of it was just people being home all of a sudden. So all those excuses and no excuses, but reasons why you thought, no, it wouldn't be right to be getting a dog because we're not home, rah-de-rah. Actually, COVID sent us all home, even in places that there wasn't much outbreak at all, like where I am in Adelaide. We all got sent home and suddenly it's like, okay, now's the chance. Now's the time when, like, enforced time at home, let's actually introduce a dog, a cat, a budgie, an animal into our lives like we've been thinking about for so long. I think that's probably the key thing that's actually happened. People think about it and then they hadn't had the chance before. So, yeah, it's good. And what I'm hearing is that the shelters haven't actually refilled. As we've been coming out of lockdowns, we're still actually keeping, those pets are still like part of our lives and they're not being relinquished as people go back to work, back to workplaces. So that's really great news in terms of animal well-being as well.
That is really good news because that's a lot of things that people were worried about, that as soon as people went back to work, that people would sadly give the pets back. So we mentioned before the fact that these pets are filling the void, that we haven't had that kind of human contact or human touch this year. In your research, what role have our pets been playing this year?
So pets are really important in terms of that touch. So we tend to think about, you know, sight and smell as our key senses. We don't think so much about touch, taste, smell. But touch in particular, that's the focus, is actually really, really important. So for example, preterm babies that don't get cuddled actually have lower survival rates than babies that are just fed, watered and kept clean. The Romanian orphans several decades ago who'd been cared for physically, etc., but emotionally hadn't been looked after. And the emotional bit was actually that business about touch. So skin's actually our largest organ. And we actually know if it's a caring touch or an uncaring touch or a clinical objective sort of touch. So we actually get lots of feedback through our skin and through that sense of touch. And it promotes happy. When we have a good touch, it promotes those happy hormones, those things that make life better, that reduce depression, etc. And it also lowers the anxiety type hormones like cortisol and so on. So touch is actually incredibly important. And suddenly, yeah, touch has gotten right up there on the international agenda, hasn't it, with the whole thing about COVID. Suddenly it's not don't touch dogs without washing your hands. It's like, don't touch people. So, yeah, we sort of got thrown into this space in quite in a way that we wouldn't have predicted in 2019.
Yeah, for sure. And with that research on how important touch is, but like also how important interacting with your pets are, how good it is for your mental health, how can that be used like practically, like in policies with governments?
So I think that there's some broad social policies around actually allowing people to live their lives with animals more readily. So just today here in South Australia, there's legislation going up which will mean that you can't say no pets in terms of rentals, which will mean that there'll be fewer animals actually relinquished to welfare agencies. So it's really important for people and for animals. And then the stuff that I've been doing is particularly around around ageing. So older people are really concerned about what will happen to pets and their inability to have contact with pets if something happens and they end up needing to go into some sort of communal care situation. And the reality is that there's very few people actually bring pets into aged care. for a whole heap of reasons, but it's simply not on the agenda. It's never a sort of, oh, and do you have a pet and would you like your pet to come with you, Mrs. Jones? It's just off the agenda. It's not talked about. So I've been working with several aged facilities actually around the idea of like, well, how do we actually change that so that it's possible for people to bring these best friends with them? When at a time when they're feeling already extremely vulnerable, and we know that when people go into high-level care particularly, they become more depressed, particularly in those initial stages. So if you could actually bring an animal that's been your companion for some years along with you, that would have to be something that helps people. It would have been great in the lockdowns we've had if people could have perhaps had their, you know, if your dog was actually with you in your nursing home room, it would be something you could be interacting with, you could be touching, and it's that warm and companionable touch as versus the clinical being kept clean and comfortable, which is we understand the difference. We feel the difference. And there's a need for the difference. But, yeah, you can't live life without companionable, caring and friendly touch either. We've all learned that this year.
That's such an interesting point too about the aged care centres, because when you think about this year, the visiting hours were often just like closed off during the peak of the pandemic. And when it was, you know, there was so much focus on, for good reason, you know, keeping people safe and healthy. Mm. But then there's this complete kind of closed off, you're not able to see your loved ones and you're not able to get that touch. And when it is, it's, you know, like you said, this kind of clinical thing. It would be interesting to see how pets could have, you know, played
could
an impact.
Could have made a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, look, and that's sort of, you know, viewing your mum through a glass window and so on. And, like, everyone's been doing their best. So it's not a criticism of the best efforts that people have been doing, but I think it's that wake-up call kind of business. Like, we've been safe from these sort of infectious diseases for over 100 years. Like, we've been incredibly privileged in the global Western wealthy world. And this is a wake-up call for, like, infectious diseases are still out there and they still cause pandemonium, and we really have no defences against them when they hit. So the possibility that, okay, we get COVID, you know, somehow managed and there's a vaccine and that's all sounding quite positive, but the possibility that there will be another mutation, another virus that somehow gets let loose in this global world, it is quite high, and we realise that now. It's sort of been, it's been there, you know, kind of the dark spectra for decades. I remember people talking about it when I was going to uni in the 80s, that sort of thing. We've kind of been dodging this bullet for a long time, but it'll happen again. So how do we actually not just keep people alive, but enable people to still continue to live quality lives and even thrive in these quite dramatically changed times? And I think animals, people that were, you know, busily acquiring pets at this point in time are actually pointing to the way in which human-animal relationships are so powerful for us. For some reason, we choose to live with animals. Like, you don't have to, but it's a, you know, like it's got this millennial history, you know, archaeologically digging up people, clearly animals that were pets to people. And it's global. There's not a place on the world where you don't have people actually choosing to live with other species and to live with them just as companions for no other purpose. But actually it's a really powerful reason, obviously.
Yeah, of course. That's a really interesting thing to bring up. Unfortunately, we're out of time. But Jeanette, thank you so much for joining us and telling us about it.
Pleasure. Thank you.